Hi, I'm Jill Faraday-Lloyd, a partner in the Chance Mancione Group at UBS Private Wealth. A warm welcome to you today for today's podcast. A large portion of my work focuses on helping female-founded businesses. And I'm really excited today to talk with my dear friend, Delilah Panio of Fortuna Funding, about what is going on currently in the funding landscape. What I would say from the get-go is that not many founders, and certainly not many women founders, are given a roadmap that tells them exactly how to grow their businesses and build them sustainably. I spent a lot of my time in the female founder ecosystem, supporting women through their incubation into their growth stage and to successful exit and beyond to living the life of their vision. So it's critical early on in a founder's journey to align their end game with their values and their goals. And so today's conversation with Delilah will go into that. And Delilah, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me.
Jill, it's such a pleasure to be here with you, my dear friend and aligned soul sister in our mission.
So let me just give you a little background on Delilah. She is, amongst many things, the vice president of U.S. capital formation for the Toronto Stock Exchange and TSX Venture Exchange, which is based in Southern California. And in Delilah's role, she advises U.S. companies on opportunities to list and to raise capital on Canada's premier equity markets. She's also the founder of Fortuna Funding, which provides practical and intentional guidance on accessing aligned capital. And that's going to be an expression we're going to talk a lot about today. Particularly, though, she's focused on female founders. She's a frequent speaker and pitch competition judge and coach. She's partnered with UBS the last 2 years on our project, Female Founder. Delilah currently sits on several advisory boards related to female founders and innovative funding vehicles. She also is the co-founder of We Are Enough, a nonprofit that educates women on why and how to invest in women-owned businesses and/or with a gender lens, which will be launching a global campaign next year. So again, Delilah, so cool to have you here. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Bill. Excited to be here.
So you've been involved in the capital markets for over 20 years.
Yes.
Can you share a little bit about what you're seeing in the capital markets today versus prior years?
Yes. I mean, we're certainly in interesting times. Most people would call it very challenging times. And this is both in the public and the private markets. So obviously, the biggest challenge is coming off of a year like 2021, which was a record year in all metrics, in all parts of the world, whether that was public markets, private, venture capital, angel investors, et cetera. 2021 was a record year, high valuations, the number of companies going public, the number of companies raising capital. And so last year and this year obviously becomes very much challenging because that was not sustainable. That kind of activity was not sustainable. Those valuations were not sustainable. So here we are through 2023 and the capital markets are slowly coming back and you're starting to see some activity in the US with some IPOs. Still not very large ones. You know, there's a huge trend of very small IPOs happening on NASDAQ right now. And some of the bigger ones are still only in the 250, sort of 500 million. So no billion-dollar IPOs yet. And that's in the U.S. and very similar in Canada. As you said, I represent TSX and TSX Venture here in California. And so similarly, we're seeing, you know, that slowly coming to market, including more and more U.S. companies that are actually looking for the Canadian markets in the small cap world. Now, if we get to private venture capital, which is where, of course, a lot of your listeners, especially female founders, would be interested. Similarly, you know, it's been a real pullback on investments. A lot of funds are doing follow-on funding. A lot of companies, unfortunately, are doing down rounds because they, of course, raised capital at, let's just call it, silly valuations in 2021. Everyone drank the Kool-Aid, and now a lot of companies are struggling. In the public markets, a lot of companies are probably going to be delisted soon, you know, maintain those share prices on NYSE or NASDAQ. And again, the private markets, those who are generating revenue are able to keep going because that's where a lot of the funding is going. I know we'll talk about that a bit later. But certainly these are challenging times. And so as always, but especially in these times, it's really important for all founders to be like looking at what their options are and being very intentional about the capital that they're raising and the strategies that we're going to deploy for that growth capital.
Well, I love what you said a minute ago about the necessity for revenue. that's the real sea change. It used to be growth on an idea. It used to be you could raise money on an idea, and now you really have to have revenue growth. So can you share a little bit about why that's so critical at this point for them in the capital raising environment?
Absolutely. It's all ultimately, you know, driven by investor demand and where the investors are putting their money. And so both in the public markets and in private venture capital, there is once again this, you know, throwback to looking at the fundamentals of a company, not just an idea, not just momentum plays or what's the hot sector that can just get financed, you know, which happened a lot in 2021, but looking at companies that are real companies, solid management team, have a real strategy and have traction on customers. It's not just an idea. They're not in R&D anymore. They're actually in commercialization. And so, you know, this always happens when there's an investor pullback, you know, again, public or private markets. And so now as investors are starting to come back into making those investments, you know, they're going to be looking for those companies that are more solid. And this is actually the good news for female founders, is at the end of the day, as we know from all the stats and the studies that have been done, female founders are way more efficient with their capital. They bootstrap better and longer. They're really good at, I think, practically just knowing that there's no guarantee that the next round is going to be there. If any female founder right now is looking at the statistics of how, you know, little they get of venture capital, whether it's, you know, still 2 or 3%, you know, if you look at the low number of women-led IPOs that exist in the U.S., here's a fun stat. 2021 was a record year for women-led IPOs, but it was 12 out of about 1,000. So when women, female founders are looking at those stats, they're saying, okay, well, whatever money we get in, we have to be more efficient because there's no guarantee of that next round, right?
So right. You have to do more with less.
Yes. And you have to just don't make the assumption that, you know, that the next round of venture capital is just going to be there just because you're getting traction. So back on the revenue side, this is where I certainly advise a lot of founders. And we talked about this, I know, in our recent salon in New York, is that, you know, you have to be looking at the different options, and revenue is so key. I see so many companies that spend so much time on raising capital and not enough time on actually looking at revenue. And, you know, more good news is that there are so many great revenue models now. I mean, if you just Google top revenue models or business models for 2023, you will get, like, there's innovative things that are happening that didn't exist a year before, 2 years ago.
Talk about a couple of those. Give me a couple of ideas.
Yeah, so some of those are, you know, anything related obviously to the gig economy, you know, and this whole idea of digitization and virtualization. Like, these are big words for things like saying things that we used to do. Like, for example, you used to be a company that sold hammers, and now you sell hammers for rent, right? Just mm-hmm. like you used to be able to, you know, like a product you used to sell, now you can rent them out because people don't want to buy them, they want to rent them. So that's a whole other revenue stream, right? You know, one of my favorite examples is a great company out of Canada where they created a really cool empathy toy. So they created a product, and then they realized that they could sell the product, you know, to corporations and to schools. And then they realized that they could sell a service to train people on how to teach people how to use the product. So they went from a product revenue-based revenue to included a service revenue. And then they realized that they could create another revenue stream of train the trainers. So you could actually train people to train other people. So the point is that you can look at what you have. Every founder, look, what are your assets? What do you have? And are there different ways to sell that same, you know, expertise or product or service? And really, I encourage everybody to really do some research on many different kinds of revenue models that exist, because I know that companies are not in maximizing the revenue that they could. It's just I just know it.
So I have a question for you. I was on the phone with a founder the other day who's putting together her model. And her question was, you know, I really want to do this one thing. This is the main feature, but I know we can also do this and this and this. And she's early. She's raising her seed round. So she's a little concerned that the people that she's pitching to will think she's all over the place. Is there a concern around that? Or do you think that that just shows forward thinking?
You know, it's a fine line, you know, when you're doing your deck and you're pitching, because you definitely want to show at the end of the day the significant potential of the company, right? From a revenue, from a growth perspective, especially if your intention is to get money from venture capitalists. There is just a practical reality of the minimum market size that you need to be going after and a minimum sort of revenue projection in the next 3 to 5 years. So you have to show the huge potential of the company. And then simultaneously, you have to show that you are focused, right? because the death of most entrepreneurs is doing too many things, trying too many things at once, and they're not focused. So it's like you say, stick to your knitting, do something really, really well, and then expand. So it's both. It's you have to show that you see the potential. The investor wants to that you're smart enough to understand and if forward thinking enough to understand, like, there is really a lot of ways you can go here. And we're going to focus on this area because of what data we've already collected, either hopefully from talking to customers, this is where we should start. And then, you know, as you gain more traction, as you gain more resources to be able to expand to different areas, then you dip your toe in a few other things, right? And it's all about ultimately collecting data. Investors always just want to know that you are making, you know, strategic decisions based on some reasonable assumptions. We talk about the financial model, which I know scares everybody, but you have to have a financial model that shows the assumptions and that they are reasonable. Everyone knows at the beginning, especially in the early stage, that the numbers are all nonsense because you don't have enough history to know what they're going to be. But you can look at industry comparables and then you just look at, you be reasonable. But the investor wants to know that you're thinking about all these things, that you're being strategic. So anytime a founder has an opportunity to show an investor, I know my business, I know the potential, I'm focused on this because of these assumptions, and we'll shift or pivot based on these other assumptions, right?
I love that.
That kind of mindset that the founder needs to get into for investors.
Absolutely critical. I love that. Thank you. The other thing that I think is important is not just revenue, but a path to profitability. Talk about that a little bit, because I'm sure you see that all the time from investors.
Yes, there's no doubt that, again, in these current market conditions, that the companies that are going to get funded, the companies that are going to go public, are the ones that have revenue, that are either profitable or on that, or have a obvious pathway to profitability. Same thing in the private markets. If you're now, so, you know, the money is all sitting there, right? But the investors are hesitant. So as they're coming back into the market, either public or private, they're going to choose the least risky companies. And obviously the least risky companies are the ones that have revenue and have profitability, because they can withstand. And very critically, the investors are looking at companies in the last 18 months. So since 2021, how have you managed your company? Mm. How have you managed not being able to raise the capital that you thought you were going to raise, you know, before the markets, you know, took a turn down? So that's what investors, I know, talking to VCs, et cetera, they're looking at, how did that management team handle the last 18 months, which has been very tumultuous and challenging, no matter who you are, whatever sector you're in, right? That's what they're looking for, is how capital efficient were they? How did they pivot if they had to? How did they cut costs? How did they grow? Did they increase revenue? Did they expand revenue streams? Did they become profitable? So the companies that are left standing after these last 18 months in this really challenging funding environment are obviously strong companies. And of course, they're the ones that are going to get the investment. So however you can package yourself up as that founder, and even like if you're thinking about raising capital, say 6 months from now, how can you show in these next 6 months that you are, again, really at the top to be able to get the funding compared to your peers?
Right. You've evolved.
Yes.
Yeah,
well, it's
exactly.
Evolved and you've gotten smarter. And because, you know, listen, it's easy to, you know, be successful in the good times, but in the really tough times, like during COVID, like in the last 18 months, these are the kinds of things that investors are going to be looking for.
You said something earlier. You said, if you want to raise venture capital money, let's talk about the different types of capital that are out there that I'm sure many founders are not thinking about. They've all been sort of trained to think, gotta go VC equity. Because there are different ways to fund your company. Revenue model is one, of course. But as you're thinking about this, I'd love you to tie in the possibility of, is it possible to get the capital that you want? Right? So if it's not VC, how can you get the capital that you want? And I think that this ends up, you got to think about your end game to raise the capital that you want.
You have to think about a few things, which, to your point, I don't think that founders spend enough time thinking about these key elements. And I will say that, you know, the startup, you know, world and the media, you know, in this country has given, is a real disservice to entrepreneurs, because they really focus on the glamorization of venture capital, right? Which I think if you asked, you know, 100 companies that took venture capital, none of them would say that it was glamorous, right? It's hard. It's hard to get the money. It's hard to take the money and meet the expectations of those investors, because they're very specific. And so,
and you give something up.
Well, first of all, external capital comes at a cost. as it should. It's someone else's money. It's not free money. And so how you think about this concept of aligned capital, which, as you know, I'm very, very passionate about, of taking that step back and thinking, one, what do I as the founder want? What is my why? Why am I building this company? What do I want out of this? Do I want to change the world? Do I want to make a ton of money? Do I want to have generational wealth for my family? Do I want to employ 100 people in my region? Do I want to just get this critical product service out because it's game changing? Whatever your why is, think about why you're doing the business, but then also thinking about what is the life you want to live, right? Because that's dictated by how much money you have, obviously, and also where the money comes from. And get real about yourself as a CEO of who you want to be in bed with in your company. Because at the end of the day, when you're giving out equity, these people own part of your company. And as we've said before, like, it's easier to get divorced than it is to get your equity back from somebody who you've given it to. So every founder needs to think about their equity as being so precious, not so precious that they don't give it away, but it's got to be the right value exchange for who you are and the kind of company you're building. And so when you think about that, you think about, I need external capital for my company because I've looked at the revenue and I still need external capital, or I want to blend, you know. Investors want to see a blend of, you know, equity and debt, ideally. And then, of course, the founders having their own skin in the game is also very critical. So if you're looking at, you know, debt options, obviously you have to have a company that can service the debt. So you have to have revenue, which, again, is another attractive reason, you know, to get the revenue, because debt is actually ultimately cheaper. You know, the right debt, obviously I'm not talking about some of the loan shark people, but, you know, regular debt is less expensive ultimately than equity. You're looking at your equity options, you know, everyone again looks at this holy grail of path of, I'm going to get angel investors, I'm going to get venture capital, I'm going to magically sell, you know, for $1 billion to corporations. Statistically, that happens for very, very, very few companies, right? And very few of those companies end up IPOing either, right? So it's really critical to be knowing those options. So if you think about, I always say, imagine your cap table at your dinner table, right? Who do you want to have for the next 5 to 10 years in your business that, by the way, have the right to ask you all kinds of questions and be up in your business about your business because you have given them equity? So how do you choose those options? You know, you have to do that pros and cons list and what I call the Fortuna funding filters. You know, what capital options are realistic for your company? So that means by the stage of your company, the size of your company, the sector you're in, how much capital you're raising, what your return on investment expectations are, those very quickly will dictate the capital option you're looking at. Let's say it's venture capital, or maybe it's crowdfunding, or maybe it's angel investors. Is it realistic for you to even get that money? Like, you got to be real about that, right? Because the capital source has an expectation of a return that either matches with what you're doing or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, then they're off the list, obviously, right? So the first thing you've got to look at when I'm looking at a capital option, is this realistic for me to get this money at this stage? And then the second filter, which is the one very few people talk about, is this option desirable to me? In other words, am I aligned with this capital? If it's an angel investor, is this person specifically aligned because it's their personal money that's coming on your cap table? Are their motivations aligned with mine? You know, what are they coming with? Is it just money? Is it Rolodex? Is it contact? Is it credibility? You know, there's all things that money come with, not just the money, right? Are they aligned with me and what I want to build? Are they going to be supportive in the tough times, right? And this is so critical for getting referrals and interviewing, you know, companies that have taken money from that capital source in the tough times, which there will inevitably be. You know, how helpful, were they supportive, were they helpful? You know, I always think about Corliss, which you and I are both a part of, this incredible, unique global funding vehicle. And when COVID hit, all those companies, a lot of them plummeted in revenue.
Yeah.
And they banded together, those women, you know, got together, rolled up their sleeves. Every founder, what do you need? What do you need? What do you need to survive? Because now we're just in survival, right? Is your capital source like that? Or is it, oh, you've had hard times. It's just easier for us to write you off because that's just based on our criteria for our fund. It's not personal. It just is what it is. But know that going in. Like, don't be naive about the motivation. So it all comes back to, you know, start with your why. What do you want? What are you building? What are your barometers for when a capital source comes and says, I want to give you money, you have to have something against it to say, yes, this is an alignment, or no, this is not. And to have the courage to say no to the wrong capital, and you know how many founders that we've talked to that, you know, they knew when they took the check that it wasn't right. We can sit here and talk about this esoterically, but I get it. You're building a company, you need payroll, you need, you know, the company's going to be in trouble. But if you take the wrong money, it just never works out. It never works out.
Yeah, we've heard lots of stories like that. There are times when you just need to survive and you need that capital to survive, and you're just going to have to know that you have to live with that investor.
And that's okay. But again, it's not being naive about it. My whole thing is don't be naive, right? It's like know the capital. And so yes, if you have to make the hard decision saying, I know this is going to be rough capital, but I'm going to do it. But at least you've known that. You've made the decision based on that. You're not just like taking a check and expecting it all to be amazing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, so how can founders use that idea of their why to manifest a successful end game? How does that work?
Well, the key is being educated, right? It's understanding, like we were just talking about, like knowing that there are options out there. There are unique debt options out there. There are unique funding vehicles like Corliss, and there's more and more. There are more micro funds, you know, being developed by women for women. There are equity options, there's crowdfunding options, the rules and regulations around crowdfunding where you can go. Let's say you're an incredible women-led consumer product or consumer tech company, which I know will be a lot of listeners like that, and you have customers already, then think about your customers as your investors. I mean, who's more incentivized than your customers to be successful, right? So because of the innovative crowdfunding opportunities now, you could raise a ton of money just from your customers and give them the equity, right? And so the point is, know all those options. And then what you and I have talked about many times is play out the cap table, right? So everyone hopefully knows that the cap table is basically just a moment of time. It's basically a spreadsheet that says who owns what of your company. It's, you know, what percentage, how many shares, how much, you know, they paid per share. And so in this moment in time, let's say you're 100%, or let's say you have two co-founders, so they're third, and your cap table, and then you raise this money from angel investors. Let's say you do your pre-seed of $150,000 at a certain valuation. Then what does the cap table look like? And then you do your seed round at, let's say, $500,000. What does the cap table look like? And then you do your Series A at $2 million. What does it look like? And here's the thing. You got to play it out from the best case scenario and the worst case scenario.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because everybody's thinking about the best case scenario.
Yeah, you're, of course. You're thinking about the rest. Everything's easy peasy in 2021. Everyone's like, oh, this is amazing. Look at how much I'm getting for this equity. And then 2022 hits and you've got to do a round, and now it's a down round. So you have to, and you work with your advisors, make sure you have a really solid securities lawyer who understands, you know, equity distribution and equity financing. And then you sit down with them or one of your investors, one of your advisors, and say, let's play at the cap table. How does this look to me? What if we did a crowdfunding here instead? What if we got to revenue here and we could get some debt and half equity? Like really, this is called the funding strategy, right? But taking that time now, because as we know, how many founders, and sadly, a lot of female founders, have raised that first, you know, pre-seed seed and given away way too much equity. Yeah. So by the time they get to their critical Series A, which certainly in the venture capital game is a make it or break it moment, right? When you're getting that Series A, and you now are going to have 10 or 15% or 20% of your company and a Series A. So that should never happen. First of all, it should never happen that you're left with that little percentage. And no investor is going to give you the money because there's no incentive for you to stay. Like, again, if you play out that cap table to the next round, you're going to have nothing. So why are you incentivized to even stay with the company, right? And investors know that. So again, be really mindful your first round of equity that you're playing out that cap table.
Early on when I was talking about this idea of, did somebody ever give you a roadmap on how to do this? Very, very few founders get them. And I like to say that Dorothy didn't make it to Oz on her own. Right? She had counsel and guidance and fairy godmothers. So the point is that you need to have a group of advisors around you that aren't just venture capitalists, right? You're going to need securities lawyers. You're going to need transactional accountants and attorneys and all of that. So working with somebody like myself or another advisor who can introduce you to people that they've worked with for years will be incredibly helpful for you so that you're not making the mistakes and end up with just 10% of the Series A?
Having the right advisors and speaking to other founders that, you know, like, what would you have done differently, right? And I think learn from other people's mistakes, right? And I think one of the critical things, obviously, where I think this, that you're brilliant and what you're doing, you know, is really playing out your own money. And this is where women, you know, as we know, are so reluctant to really spend the time or understand that. I'm not trying to be stereotypical, but just like just a lot of women don't think about the big money and then how that plays out. As you know, this we talk to you now, you know, their financial advisor before the money is, you know, close and suddenly you're signing a big deal and you're like, oh, there's a massive tax hit or a capital gains issue here or whatever. It's like the whole point of all this conversation is the more intentional you are from the beginning, the more you understand the game you're playing, the more you understand the potential pitfalls and mistakes that can be made that other people have already made, you know, whatever you believe in around the power of manifestation or laws of attraction or whatever it is, I think at this point, we all know that the intention you put out there will come back. And why not, right? Like, why not take the time now to really think about, this is really what I want? Because there's a million ways to build a business. There's a ton of ways to get capital. There are different strategies. So why not take the time to think about, like, who do I want the cap table at my dinner table, right? Who do I want to spend that time with? Who do I want to build something great with? Right? I mean, you're excited about it now. So think about who are your investor avatars, right? Like who are those kinds of people? What skill set? What are they bringing besides money? You know, like I said, Rolodex or contacts or credibility. And if you start with that intentionality around it, then there's a greater chance you're going to manifest it.
Absolutely. And this all gets back to building a network, right? That's ultimately extremely critical for founders. And some women think it's kind of an icky thing to do, feel like it's transactional. You got to go to an event and take as many business cards as possible. That's not what it's about. It's about learning and becoming more interesting and being really interested in what other people have gone through and going to events, going to salons like I host or going to female founder or founder events and hearing stories, really the intimate stories of what I wish I did, what I wish I knew that I didn't know, right? Because Dorothy didn't get to Oz by herself, right? And so these next women who come behind us, they're standing on our shoulders for sure. I want them to know all the mistakes that we've made along the way.
And it's really, at the end of the day, it's just about relationships. I mean, you know, you can classify business in a million ways and have, you know, Harvard case studies about how to build a business, but I'm in the business of relationships. I mean, that's, you know, I do business development for a stock exchange and everything I do. And, you know, I have my life mantra and my work mantra, which I have at this stage, which I certainly did not have before. Because listen, I've been in the capital markets for 20 years. It's all about the hustle, right? I mean, that is, it's really pushed on you, the hustle. And like I said, you got to get as many business cards as possible and just grind it out. And I just don't believe in that anymore. And so here's my life mantra that works very well for me. Very simple. Show up, be delightful, and let the magic happen.
I love that.
So here's the key. You got to show up. And by show up, you got to be like smart on your game, know your stuff, be respectful, know who you're talking to, especially with investors. You got to show up properly. And then just be delightful. Like people just want to do business with delight, especially more and more as the chaos in the world continues. Like we're gravitating toward people that are like-minded brothers and sisters, and we are on the same mission, and certainly taking money from somebody like you want them to be like that. So be delightful and then just let it go, like let the magic happen, right? Like, yes, you got to do the work, you got to show up, but this idea of the grind and the hustle, I personally don't believe anymore. And I'm in this business, I can tell you that because I have showed up and I have the credibility and I've worked hard, et cetera, but because I am, honestly, I'm just delightful.
You are.
I'm delightful, Delilah. I mean, like, I could tell that. And it's such a, because I'm in the world of men and men in finance, right? Mostly men. Most of the CEOs I talk to are men. And so, you know, I have a way of talking to people and communicating, especially like financial conscious owner, but mostly I'm just delightful and I'm empathetic. Like I understand, I'm compassionate. I get how hard it is to raise capital. I get the reality of the world out there and the really egregious money that's out there that's horrible, that really just destroys companies and technologies and people. And so I get it. And so the more I just show up and I'm delightful And honestly, like, my business just goes, right? It really does. And so, yeah, that's my life mantra.
Wow. Well, you've always been so generous with your time and knowledge. You've been so delightful. What are you working on now that maybe I can help you with, or that our audience might be able to help you with?
Well, thank you. You know, this is such a great conversation because, as we know, being in the ecosystem, you and I are in a specific part of the ecosystem, but we know that the whole ecosystem is broken, right? I mean, at the end of the day, when you think about why there aren't more women-led IPOs, it's because they're not getting venture capital, they're not getting the angel investment, they're not getting that critical friends and family money that, you know, women, especially women of color, typically do not have access to. So the whole ecosystem is, like, you know, designed not for us, right? Not for women. And so that's what gives me kind of heart palpitations at night. I think, okay, how do we solve the whole ecosystem, right? And so we each have to pick our lane. So, you know, while I'm in the capital markets for my day job with Toronto Stock Exchange, again, trying to encourage more women to get to the stage where they can go public, because then they can have the big exit and then go back and pay it forward, invest in more companies. That's what the men have been doing since the beginning of the stock market, right?
Yep.
The capital markets for funding and investing and building wealth. So more companies that can look at, like, looks like where women-led business can go public. Second thing, for Fortuna funding, you know, I do a lot of work with Fortuna and with We Are Enough around educating women to be investors, right? Here's the reality, Jill, you and I know human nature. People invest in who and what they know, right? And so we're never going to solve the big problem ultimately of having all the men suddenly investing equally in women. I just don't think that's going to happen in my lifetime. So we need more women to be investors, which, luckily, good news, Western women, you know, have a lot more money than we ever had. The transfer of wealth to women is significant. And so initiatives like We Are Enough, and when we launch our global campaign next year, you know, I'll definitely be tapping you to help us with that. And certainly the work that we're doing with UBS, right? I mean, UBS has wonderfully stepped forward to not just say, hey, there's a funding gap, but how do we solve it? Which is part of what Project Female Founder and some other initiatives that they're doing are. And then finally, personally, you know, what I'm doing next is I'm going to be launching a podcast, my own podcast, in the coming months. And it's really about talking to people around the transformation they've been through to get to the incredible, innovative ideas that they're at, whether that's either in finance or in health or all the things that are kind of part of me. I've gone through some significant spiritual transformation through some divine health things that have happened to me. I've gone through breast cancer, and I've used those things that have happened, that happened to all of us, as how is this meant to change my life? And so I know that that has happened to many, many, many people. And I know that the innovators have typically gone through some kind of transformation in their lives to come to innovation. And whatever that is, even just in your own personal life. And so my podcast is called Undoing. And it's really about undoing all the paradigms and all the belief systems that we've gathered throughout our life that have driven us to ultimately either dis-ease in the spirit or disease, ultimately, which is, you know, what has happened to me. And so I'm excited to have those conversations. I'm excited to have you on the podcast talking about your life and the amazing things that have happened to you and how it's driven you to your current mission, which we are so aligned on.
Oh my gosh, Delilah, thank you so much for being with me today. It's just such a joy. And I look forward to working with you for many, many years to come. We have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of women to lift up, but I'm confident. I'm really hopeful that through the efforts of people like yourself and the founders, the female founders who are really putting it out there to the women and the allies that are venture capitalists that are backing these businesses, that we are making headway. It may not feel like it at that time, but we truly are. And there's a world of knowledge out there. There's a wealth of knowledge out there, and you have to educate yourself. And if I or any of my team at UBS can be helpful to you, I'd be delighted to help any of these listeners to get to the place where they can really understand what their why is, what their mission is, and so that they can really own their worth.
And that we're going to do it our way, right? We're going to do it in our innovative way, in our feminine way. We're going to take the best of who we are as women, and we're going to, yeah, I also am very confident being in conversation with women like you, and not even just women, but men. Like, there's a lot of people that are having this conversation, and I'm just grateful to be part of it and really grateful to be included in on your podcast today.
Thank you. Have a wonderful, wonderful day, and thank you all for listening. Take care.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.